Thank you again for your patience. The next case of the day is State versus Felix, Arizona. Justice Stacy is recused on this case and the final two cases of the day also. And in her place, we have Judge Inbody from the Court of Appeals. With that information, we will go forward. Mr. Sarikoff, I hope I got that right.
Sarikoff, I apologize. Good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Nathan Sarikoff. I'm here on behalf of the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. We represent Felix Arizola. Your Honors, I'd like to start today by dealing not with the issue that's going to be confronting the court in the next two cases. This case is different than the next two cases as it deals with a suppression issue that is unique to just this case. And I'd like to spend the entirety of my time on that issue. So I'd ask you to save questions you have on the DUI, double jeopardy, and due process issues for Rhodey, which is coming up next. And I'll answer your questions there. Your Honor, the question before the court when it comes to the suppression issue is whether police officers are free to conduct a Terry stop and pull an individual over simply because the individual is driving a vehicle whose registered owner has a revoked or suspended license. In the district court, the court is looking at two different standards of review. Clear error for the findings of fact that the district court made, and for questions of law, specifically dealing with the Chartier case, we're looking at a standard review that is obviously de novo. We don't think that the pivotal issue was decided, the pivotal factual issue was decided by the district court. So we think the court's analysis can focus on nothing but the de novo analysis. But in the lower court, what happened was there was a suppression hearing. The officer testified that he approached the vehicle, Mr. Arizola's vehicle, and the vehicle had a license plate that was registered to Mr. Arizola, that Mr. Arizola did not have a license, and that he then pulled up alongside of the vehicle. This is at night. He looked through the glass windows and he testified that he identified that as being Mr. Arizola just by looking at a profile.
There was a contrary witness, however.
I was just getting to that, Your Honor. Yes.
Well, but doesn't this boil down to a conflict of testimony, and the district judge sided with the arresting officer who said, I could see and I did identify him?
Incorrect. It does not boil down to just a conflict of testimony. She did not reach that issue. The district court judge, Judge Strong, said that even if the officer's testimony is not, she said she never even reached the officer's testimony as being credible or not. She said regardless of whether the officer's testimony is credible, I find that Chartier applies, and the officer could have pulled him over without identifying the defendants. That was the basis of the entirety of the district court's decision, was based on Chartier, not based on whether or not the officer was testifying truthfully or not. So I disagree that this is a question of conflict of evidence. This is a question of whether or not Chartier...
Isn't the way she stated it, doesn't that imply that she was giving credibility to the officer?
No, I think if you look at read the opinion in its entirety, she goes in and she said, regardless of whether, first she talks about the officer's testimony, then she talks about Investigator Kaiser's testimony, then she comes back and says, regardless of who's telling the truth, essentially, I'm not quoting her exactly, but if you look at that paragraph, regardless, Chartier applies, and I don't have to reach the issue of facts as to whether or not the officer made an identification through the tinted windows at night.
What's the legal significance of not having made that fact on appeal?
Right. The fact that she did not make that finding means that you, the court, gets to analyze this as a de novo review because it's a question of law. She did not make a finding as to whether or not an actual identification was made, and that's pivotal. She did not make that finding. Because she didn't make that finding...
Well, what if the court were to say that the recitation is an error of law, but nevertheless, the facts support a factual finding of officer saw that could see.
I don't think because Supreme Court wasn't there to weigh the facts. I don't think it's appropriate for the Supreme Court to say that the facts are in support, because you weren't there to judge the credibility of the witnesses, and the district court punted, essentially, and decided. So
and
I think
you're
the
saying
appropriate
because
remedy,
there's a conflict in the testimony.
Right. So I think the appropriate remedy for the court is to, if the court says, believes that this issue could be decided on the facts and that Chartier does not trump the factual analysis, if the court says Chartier does not apply, then the court does have to remand and have the district court make the finding of the facts, because clearly if the district court finds that the officer actually identified the defendant, then he was justified in making a stop. That's not our position, is that if an officer who is conducting his patrol notices someone who's driving who does not have a license, that officer can clearly stop that individual. What we're saying is something entirely different, that Chartier creates a situation where, forgive me if I'm being too personal, but your children driving your vehicle, if you forgot to get yourself licensed, and your children are driving your vehicle, they can then be pulled over and investigated because they're driving a vehicle that is owned by someone who's not licensed. I think that's hugely problematic. It is not reasonable suspicion to drive a vehicle that is owned by someone else.
Well, let's put it this way. If you were the chief of police and your officer did not stop that car, wouldn't you want to fire that officer?
No. I think I would encourage that officer to actually do further investigation before he initiates a stop. We don't want to live in a police state where we can be pulled over.
It seems to me you've left out one fact in your argument, is that the officer identified the person as the person whose license had been revoked. And that's a factual issue decided by the trial court, isn't it?
I'm saying the fact the trial court did not actually make that factual finding.
They found the stop was reasonable, didn't they?
Because of Chartier. The trial court said that it doesn't matter whether or not the officer actually identified the defendant.
Oh, okay. Right result, wrong reason?
No, I don't think it's the right result. I think it's the wrong result, wrong reason.
Okay.
I think if the trial court had identified, had said in its findings of fact that the driver was identified and that it credits the officer's testimony over the investigator's testimony, I don't think we'd be here. I concede that issue.
Counsel, if I'm going to quote from the order, which I have in front of me now, and the first two sentences of this finding upon which you rely, defendant argues that Officer Villamonte could not have identified Mr. Arizola because the window tint on the vehicle was too dark. However, the officer testified that he was able to identify Mr. Arizola after pulling up alongside him at the intersection. Taking those two sentences alone, I realize the next sentence goes on to say, even if, but taking those two sentences alone, aren't those at least an implicit finding that she credited the officer's testimony?
No, what she's doing there is she's saying, there's a conflict here. And then the next sentence she's saying, I don't want to decide the conflict.
And if we disagree with that argument on that issue, in other words, if we say it is a fact, an implicit factual finding, you concede the standard of review is clear error and it's not clearly erroneous.
That would be the standard of review if this court finds, and I don't agree that you should go that direction. I think you should address Chartier.
I respect your argument, but I just wanted to be absolutely clear about what was in the order.
Right.
Counselor, also on the first page of the order, doesn't she make setting forth the facts of the hearing, set forth that as the officer pulled up to the intersection, you can identify the driver as Mr. Arizola?
She's repeating the facts that were, or not the facts, she's repeating the testimony of the officer, and then she goes on to repeat the testimony of my witness, the investigator from the public defender's office. And she's not at that point in time, and this is what Judge Castle's statement, she's not at that point in time weighing the evidence yet. She doesn't get to weighing the evidence. She never actually explicitly says, and I don't think she even implicitly says, that one witness is more credible than the other. She says, I don't have to reach the evidence because of Chartier, and I think Chartier is problematic.
Well, doesn't the sentence before that paragraph start with, the court now finds orders as follows, and sets forth in that paragraph that the officer pulls up to the stoplight, looks to his left or his right, looks at the individual behind the wheel, identifies as Mr. Arizola. Isn't that a finding?
But later on in the in that paragraph, I believe, if I recall in the right place, I don't know the order in front of me, but as I recall, she talks about the investigator's conflicting testimony. So I don't think it's a finding per se. I think that when she addresses Chartier, what she's doing, she's saying, I don't have to reach this.
She's already reached it, though, hasn't she?
No, I don't think she has. I don't think she made an order that the, or she made a finding that the officer was testifying truthfully or that the investigator was testifying truthfully.
It's your position that the whole language that's being discussed is simply a recitation of what the testimony, her recitation of what took place during the trial.
That's exactly what my position is.
And, she's just, and then after she does that, then she says it doesn't matter because of Chartier.
Right. That's exactly right. I don't think she wanted to reach, I don't think she intentionally reached the deciding the issues of the facts, whether which officer was, or which witness was testifying truthfully or not, or which witness to credit. I think what she was doing, she said, this is the evidence, but I don't have to reach the evidence because Chartier controls regardless.
But she doesn't say that in there. According to the officer's testimony, she's saying this is the facts of the case as she finds it.
To be fair to counsel, I think Judge Funk is reading from page 1 of the order, whereas I was reading from page 3. So I think you should answer his question in response to what page 1 says.
In my trial days as a district judge, I would say the officer, if I disagree or was concerned, the officer testified X. I didn't say in my findings, the officer observed and made this observation.
Right, and I understand the problem. I think on page 1 and then later on page 2, what she does, she says, these are my findings, and she says X, Y, and Z, and Z is also the testimony of my investigator. So I think she can't have found both. She can't have found that the officers identified the defendant and that the investigator said, well, it would have been impossible under similar situations to have identified the defendant. Because that's the finding that she made. She said that both are true, and both can't be true. One has to be true, or if you don't want to decide which one is true, you go to Chartier. And I think that addresses the conflict in page 1, and I think it was 2 or 3, of what was there. Because I identified that. I saw that when I read the order. But as you continue reading the order, you see she addresses the investigator's testimony in that same paragraph as well. So I think you can't make two findings that are exclusive of each other, and then only credit, this court can't only credit the one finding that hurts the defendant. So I think in the context of the whole order, you're looking at actual, not findings of fact, but actually a recitation of the evidence.
So you're saying a finding of fact has never been made by the trial court?
I don't think a finding of fact that the officer identified the defendant was ever made. That's correct. I don't think she reached that issue.
You want to reverse and remand for a new trial?
I didn't hear you.
You want to reverse and remand for a new trial to make a determination of that fact?
I think that if you apply Chartier, if this court says Chartier does not apply, because the escape valve for this court is to say Chartier applies, obviously. But if the court says the district court should have made a factual finding, then yeah, you have to reverse remand for a new trial, and the judge has to make a factual finding. I don't know off the top of my head if the court can remand to the district court to clarify its order. I don't know if it can do that. But at this point in time, I don't think you have an order that makes a finding of fact that the officer identified the defendant, which would give reasonable suspicion to conduct a stop. I've ran out of time, I think, by a couple minutes. If they have any more questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ralph, good morning to you.
Good morning. Hey, police the court. My name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Three assigned errors here. He claims that the district court erred in overruling the motion to suppress. He claims that the statute, section 60-6197.09, is unconstitutional, both facially and as applied. And then he claims that the court erred in overruling the motion to quash and bar. I'll address each in detail here shortly, but basically we submit there without merit. We ask this court to affirm the judgment below. I'll start with the suppression.
Is the identification of a person driving under a suspended license, reasonable suspicion, or probable cause?
Well, both, you know, in our view, but all you need is reasonable suspicion for a Terry stop. But I'll start with the suppression issue. The district court order I've got right here in front of me does make that finding. As Judge Funk pointed out, the first paragraph, last sentence, the court now finds and orders as follows. Very next paragraph, sentence, Officer Viamonte pulled up next to the vehicle a stoplight at the intersection of 35th Street and Corman's Creek Highway and identified Mr. Arzola as the driver from the book-in photo and DMV photo. And on page 4, Justice Castle pointed out those two sentences about defendant argues Officer Viamonte could not have identified Mr. Arzola because the window tint on the vehicle was too dark. However, the officer testified that he was able to identify Mr. Arzola after pulling up alongside him at the intersection.
And so the first part of the order that followed after the court finds and orders, there's no discussion in those findings at all about what the investigator...
Correct. There's no discussion about Investigator Kaiser or the video or anything regarding the window tint investigation.
So the heart of your argument is that the plain language of the order made the factual finding.
Yes, and the court weighed the evidence, made the finding that he identified the driver. It's not clearly wrong. Therefore, that provided reasonable suspicion for the stop. I did point out in my brief as well that I think Chartier is fine. Cited a couple cases holding basically that once you have a registered owner whose license is revoked, as long as there's nothing indicating that they're not the person driving, that's sufficient to justify a Terry stop. But my primary position is the court made a factual finding, credited the officer's testimony that he identified Arzola, and thus the stop was justified by reasonable suspicion.
Just as a point of inquiry, what was the factual situation in Chartier? It was not
directly the same. It was basically the officer, I think, ran the plate, realized that the registered owner's license was revoked, but he couldn't maneuver forward to actually ID the driver. And so he just pulled them over. And they said, well, you know, that's fine. Under the Fourth Amendment, it was reasonable because basically you had the registered owner's license revoked and you were unable to make an identification. That was sufficient justification.
Suppose the registration is husband and wife and only the husband has been suspended.
Well,
Wasn't that the situation in Chartier? Wasn't the argument that there was a female driving the car?
Well, yes, they did make that argument, but the officer in that position was not able to make an identification. He couldn't get forward, and they said it was sufficient justification. I guess, Your Honor, as far as if you know, you have two people registered owners, only one of which has been license revoked,
right.
I still think that if you have reasonable suspicion, something less than probable cause. I think the officer came full over to make sure that he's not the one driving. Different scenario, but again,
take my scenario again. Husband suspended, wife is not. And at glimpse, it appears to be a woman driving. Is there now reasonable suspicion?
No. And I think that's part of those cases that I cited. I think it's Iowa. I forget the second one, but basically they said as long as there's no evidence indicating otherwise that it's somebody other than the registered voter driving. And I think you're hypothetical there would fall in that scenario, but then you no longer have reasonable suspicion.
Is your position to say if the officer says I can't tell who's driving, but I know the registered owner is suspended?
Yes. My position would be the same.
That's Chartier, isn't it?
Yeah, to justify a stop. But again, I want to emphasize my position, primary position in this case, is that we have a factual finding that the officer identified the driver as Arzola. That was credited by the district court, and that clearly provides, opposing counsel conceded, that clearly provides sufficient justification for the stop. He just disputes whether the finding was made, but the order clearly, I think, makes that finding. Moving to the constitutionality of 60-619709, basically, as I set forth in my brief, he makes an as-applied and facial challenge. I don't think either of those was reserved for appellate review. The as-applied challenge is basically, you know, I wasn't provided procedural due process, but I think if you look at the record, he doesn't make his argument in terms of procedural due process or constitutional requirements. He just takes issue with that he wasn't given a separate hearing. So I don't think it's preserved. If it is, though, it's without merit. He was given notice and opportunity to be heard, as set forth in my brief. As far as the facial challenge, he claims the statute was vague. But again, he did not raise that motion. Or raise that in a motion to quash. State v. Albrecht, the Court of Appeals decision. directly on point, says that that's not preserved. I do note in my brief again that this court's decision, State v. Prescott, sort of calls that into question, I think. But even on the merits, it has no merit because it's not unconstitutional to take. And I guess as far as the motion to quash and plea and bar, I think that the district court properly overruled those. No merit to those arguments. I guess I'll wait for the next case as well to delve more in deeply into that. So unless this court has any further questions, ask to affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the...